Next, we have Doug Carlin. We're going to move from looking at switchgrass yields and field trials associated with switchgrass to corn stover.
Thank you, Tris. What I would like to share with you today under the topic here of corn stover, feedstock field trials, and future integrated visioning is the work that's ongoing led by the ARS REAP Renewable Energy Assessment Project Team and the regional partnership that evolved from that, that bridges together the ARS and university partners through the Sun Grant Association. There are many, many, many contributing people to this presentation. The list got too long to fit on the list, so I told them they were all acknowledged, and I was only going to put my name on the front there. So look here, first of all, at the team structure. Some of the limiting factor approach that we're taking to assessing the sustainability of corn stover removal, a focus on the corn stover and soil carbon interactions, the field study protocols and some initial results. Also a part of the corn stover team is an integrated modeling approach, a corn stover tool. I'll share a little bit about how that's developing, evolving, and where that part of the modeling is going to. And I'm going to end on an integrated feedstock vision, which I think is really where the long-term direction is for sustainable biofuel feedstock production practices. The REAP team, formed in 2005 as part of the ARS National Program 202 on Soil Resource Management, with a vision of sustainable feedstock production and harvest, goals of evaluating management practices, developing decision support tools, quantifying the trade-offs between retaining and harvesting crop residues. Corn stover was the initial focus, but REAP has been expanded to include miscanthus, switchgrass, sweet sorghum, sugarcane bagasse, and CRP research thrust as part of the entire national team. The partnership team evolved in 2007 then in partnership between ARS and the Sun Grant Association. The late Willie Walhelm was very instrumental in helping form this along with Vance Owens and the other folks that established this, and we acknowledge all the efforts that Wally went through to get that going. But it includes basically seven field sites and then the other modeling sites where information is coming about from the partnership team. The partners include ARS scientists, university scientists, and of course a very important industry component. Monsanto is a full partner in this work, as is John Deere. The seven field locations are near Ames, Iowa, St. Paul, Morris, Minnesota, Lincoln, Nebraska, Brookings, South Dakota, University Park, Pennsylvania, and Florence, South Carolina. Some people might ask, well, why does Florence in with a corn production area, especially when the 2008 yields, as you'll see a little bit later, were down at 84 bushels per acre? Well, in reality, REAP goes back in ARS to the last time we had biomass work, back in the 70s, and there was national studies that went from Florence, Lincoln, Ames, St. Paul, on out into the Pacific Northwest on the wheat straws at that time. And since I had been involved in the early studies at Florence, this was an opportunity to bring them back in and capture some of the soil changes that occurred after 30 years on plots that, and sites that had been maintained down there. So we reinvigorated studies in the southeast, in the coastal plain too. The limiting factor approach is what REAP is and the corn stover team looks at. Not only the erosion, but also, first and foremost, in our opinion, we'll show in a little bit while, the soil organic carbon, its impact on the soil quality, the production, the water, the nutrient cycling. Erosion is not a diminished problem. It's there. It's equally important there, but it's productivity, water, nutrients. The nutrient balance itself, water and temperature are being evaluated, the compaction issues, and off-site environmental degradation. All of these are the factors that the REAP team, through the field studies, is trying to get a handle on through a number of different ways, both field measurements, use of simulation models, and all of those combined approaches. Well, excuse me, why was the initial focus on corn stover? Well, basically, if you look at the 2008-2009, we got off 35 million hectares of corn. And there are some out there that still perceive the stover as trash. It kind of raises the hairs on soil scientists to call it trash, although when it plugs up our equipment, we call it trash too. And it is a frustration. And of course, there are several ethanol plants, green ethanol plants, that in the solicitation of 2007 are actually implementing lignocellulosic conversion processes to a corn stover. Not going to talk about it a lot today, but one of the studies that is a spinoff that I'm involved in is actually at the Emmitsburg site with POET, which is they're moving into the corn stover, and that spinoff study is a quarter section of field research that my colleague Stuart Burrell and I are involved with there. But it is a dominant one of the residues, one of the sources of feedstocks there. Again, the billion ton report and the emphasis earlier today, there's no question the erosion control of the stover. It was well accounted for. It's well understood. It's very important, and REAP never questioned that. What we were most concerned about was that if you got excessive crop residue, you could also accelerate that loss of soil organic matter. And if you did that, you'd have some number of long-term implications. The loss of soil quality, decreased water entry and retention, decreased nutrient cycling, the productivity effects. Of course, if you're not getting the water into the soil, retaining it for crop production, if it's running off, carrying with it the surface fine materials, any nutrients, you're going to have off-site damages, as well as the sediment. The increased environmental degradation, and of course, ultimately, an inability, if we destroy our soil resource, not only will we not have a feedstock for fuel production, but will impact our food, our feed, and our fiber production capabilities. This is sort of the mantra slide for REAP. You can take any place in the world, and you have a pre-cultivation, steady-state organic matter level. That's why it's unitless on that left axis there. When agriculture began and began with the tillage operations, the drainage operations, all of the aspects of agriculture, is no one factor. That's the important part. No one thing is driving all this. But the net effects is that in somewhere between 25 to 100 years or thereabouts, you cut that soil organic matter level in half. You can do that whether you're in the Midwest and you go from 6 to 3%. If you go in the coastal plain, from 2 to 1. If you go to India, from 1 to half, it doesn't matter. That curve holds globally. It's in a quasi-steady state. And then we talk about removing the stover. If you remove the stover and don't do other alternative practices, cover crops, increased efficiencies, green manures, higher innovative technologies, you're going to have another drop. There's just no way it's going to your bank. If it's pulling out your principals, it's going to go down. So that was really the basis of the mantra for stover, for REAP team efforts. And then these just illustrate some of these. It's because that soil carbon affects the structure. The structure is the nutrient cycling, the water retention, the plant rooting. All of those aspects are involved. And the residue also is the food for the microorganisms, the macroorganisms, the formation of the microbial biomass, the biological, the chemical, and the physical attributes of soil quality that we talk about. And that was what we were focusing on. So for the corn stover field trials then, we developed a core field experiment. And we capitalized because this was a partnership between ARS and university locations. At these seven locations, we didn't have just a single, they had a core experiment, but then it capitalized on several other ongoing studies. So some of these have multiple years of history already with tillage, with crop productions, with cycling. But we are occurring then at those seven locations. The core experiment includes no tillage or the least amount possible if they cannot make no-till per se work. And at the AIM situation, we've got both. Three Stover harvest rates, what we call 0, 50, and 100%. And then four replications. And of course, other treatments, cover crops, twin row spacing, high fertility, biochar, those are pieces of parts that are part of these studies too. But I'm not going to go into great detail on those. I'm just trying to focus in on the core work that the team is doing. We put a strong emphasis on the soil, obviously coming out of a soil resource management emphasis. So the critical thing was to start with a profile assessment of the carbon and other critical factors. We did the depth increments that you can see. The minimum soil data set was to get a total organic carbon level, nitrogen, pH, soil test, P and K, bulk density. Because of labor constraints, sampling costs, all the other challenges, we suggested other analyses. Most locations are getting at least a good portion of these, aggregate stability, palm carbon, secondary and micronutrients, soil enzymes, etc. And then as resources are available, those are collected. So I'll give you a little bit now on some of the initial results. Looking across the the seven locations, you can see we got quite a range there in bulk density. Obviously, the 175 bulk densities are the ones from the coastal plain. That's pretty typical for a coastal plain soil. If you don't do anything to that, it reconsolidates to a bulk density of around 1.7 or 1.8 each year. That's an area that takes the in-row subsoiling to even get a plant established, etc. The Midwestern Mollisols and Alfasols of the University Park location there are around the 1.10 to 1, and then averaging all of this location together about a 1.3. Quite a broad range in total organic carbon there. 0.8 to 4.5%, if you like the English units rather than the metric units there. Total nitrogen in line with the carbon levels. pH was all good all the locations. Soil test phosphorus, again, quite a broad range. Soil test K, again, a broad range from the field locations that are part of the field studies there. All of these, this represents the data collected at the initiation of the field Stover trials for 2008. Looking at the yield grain yields from last year, range there was 5.4 to 14.8, almost 15 megagrams per hectare on the grain yield, or 84 to 236 bushels. What was quite pleasing on that broad range is that out of our field stocks, our field Stover sites, we had a mean there of the essentially right on the national grain average for last year. May have been fortuitous, but we'll take luck when we get it. But we are representative, I think, is the message, is we've got the enough field sites scattered out that we're not terribly skewed. We then have a number of Stover harvest techniques associated with what we're doing. We've got the infamous diaper method there that Richard Hess suggested to our folks at Florence, putting a canvas on behind the combine. That particular location, the plots are a little bit smaller than some others, and they're able to collect all of the Stover, weigh it, and then they put it back out manually in a proportional basis. Probably not going to be the acceptable way at a farmer's scale, but works well for research. The single pass operation there in the middle, that's the one that Stuart Burrell and myself are working on in Iowa. A one pass harvest operation where you're getting the grain and the Stover, or the grain and the cobs, or whatever fraction you want, or with the ultimate capacity sort of envisioned to have GPS on there and positioning where you can differentially take the Stover and be collecting it or kicking it back out on the ground depending on the soil needs. Jane Johnson uses a small forage plot harvester there to pull off her residues. Shannon Osborne up at Brookings is using the forage chopper over there to pick up that. Hest and Stackhand is used at the University Park, and a traditional flail chopper out in the Nebraska location near Mead. So again, it's a number of different ways that Stover is being removed. but trying to get as close to real world as we can. So where did we wind up last year? We had a 50% removal target rate. That ranged between 1.5 and 8.3 megagrams per hectare, about a 0.6 and 3.7 tons per acre level. An average of 1.5 tons at the low removal. If you took the high target removal rate, you again didn't see much of a difference there between that 4.7 and 8.5. Probably say, why? Well, that's because the Minnesota, the Iowa sites lodged wind damage. When the wind goes down, the grain ears go down to the ground. You can't, the criteria is to cut it right below the ear shank, but if the corn is down, you get it all, whether you're cutting half the stover or all the stover. So it's real hard in a mechanical, in a real world sense. This is real reality data. You'll also notice there, if you calculate a percent, I'm at 39 and 59%. I told you 50 and 100. What's the matter? Can't you do your math, Carlin? No. This is what you actually get. An error in model assumptions is to use harvest index with data taken at physiologic maturity when you go out there and cut off the plant and get the exact weight of your plant and your stover and assume that's the collectible amount of stover. Ain't going to be. You're not going to collect all that stover. You're going to have wind damage, you're going to have leaves drop, you're going to have things on the ground. This represents, I think, more of a collectible harvest index, and that goes along with what Wally and Reed Hoskinson and I put out in our first effort there. So that's where we were on the stover harvest the first year. Now, another one that I've been harping on, and since we got back into this, because when I first talked about the stover, it was a fairly minimal cost that was being talked about paying the farmer because of the perception that, well, they're going to help them get rid of this material they didn't really want anyway. But I looked at the nutrient replacement cost alone. And so this is just the macronutrients, NPK. This is just the additional nutrients removed with that stover fraction there. And then this is the value based on 2009 fertilizer prices. This is in the prices I was given in August of this year. From several different sources, and I pulled them together. It's obviously fluctuated around. But based on the average removal there of N, P, and K, about 42 kilograms per hectare of N and 45 of K and a 5 of P, about $14 worth of per megagram of removal there. We're also doing a number of other measurements with trace gases, aggregate stability, infiltration, cover crops, etc. And the modeling work is bringing together a lot of these different models that we see there. And I'm going to hurry here just to get to the little bit of the integrated visioning, because I think that's the message I'd like to leave with you. The modeling is bringing a lot of different databases together in that. But where is the integrated visioning that REAP is headed to going? Right, finally, we're looking at all the different feedstock sources that are out there. We're looking at multiple platforms. Do not assume that every conversion is going to be a biochemical plants consolidated, centrally located. Ain't going to happen. The logistics are going to kill you. You're going to have diversified units. You're going to have some are going to be biochemical, some are going to be pyrolysis, some are going to be catalytic. It's going to be a distributed, multiple options. That's what the future is really going to hold. We're going to have to do it within a landscape. The common denominator is water is going to bring this together downhill. You're going to have diversity. You're going to have to recognize the connections. And how are you going to do that? You can go into an area, you scope the landscape, you understand the characteristics, you determine the production and conservation needs, you match those needs with the critical conservation practices. That's where the models are going to be most useful. They're going to help us model some of that, practices against that. We're going to apply those practices using site-specific management so we understand the soil resource and the implications of the climate and climate change. After you implement the practices, you're going to monitor against that baseline. You're going to come back and validate those models. Then you're going to evaluate, model, and make adaptive changes. It's an iterative process. This is a long-term future that we're looking at here. That's what the long-term vision is for this. So in summary, the multi-location field studies are established. We're developing a lot of databases, both the KDF, the Knowledge Development Framework, that Oak Ridge is taking a lead on. ARS is putting together a database that will be in conjunction with GraceNet and RCEP and other agency ones that are going to have a lot of information for modeling and resource that. The model simulation work as well. And in conclusion, monitoring the soil and the water resources is as the fundamental principle in this biofuel arena is the most critical. We have to also be cognizant of climate change and land tenure effects, the decisions that affect the landowner. And finally, a single source feedstock system will be problematic and probably not ever implementable. So I probably used up my time, Tris, but.
Thank you for the last several slides. Sorry to rush you on those.